Hello, welcome once again to Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola, the podcast, a weekly podcast that discusses the television series Fallout on Amazon Prime. Though the series was released all at once, we are doing an episode a week to talk about each episode of the series. So we're watching one episode this week, and then we're going to talk about it, and so on and so forth. Today is May 20th, 2024. That we are recording this, and who are we? So I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
And, oh, good, good. And in the state of Missouri?
Hi, this is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you?
Being deafened by cicadas.
Oh, there you go. And in the Canadian province of Alberta, Canada?
Go Oilers, go. This is Sean. Hope everyone's doing well.
How are you? All right. So basically, we're part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. Basically, we are a news network of podcasts talking about genre things. So all sorts of television series and movies and things of that nature. We have an email called darkdiscussions@aol.com where you can email us. Just put in Fallout in the subject and whatever subject you want, and then we'll know that your email is specifically for this podcast here, since that's a shared email, and we will read your email on this podcast. So whatever you have opinions and whatnot on Fallout, we are here to hear your feedback. Also, we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group where you can join in the conversations. And then, of course, we have our website, which is darkdiscussions.com. Sean, what else can people find on darkdiscussions.com?
On the website, you can find the link for Patreon, which is a way that people can support their favorite creators. So click on the link. It'll take you to Patreon. And it's a way you can financially support your creators like us. For any amount that you're able to donate each month is appreciated. A dollar a month really counts for us, because even though all the podcast stuff is – all the podcasts across the Dark Discussions Network are released free, there's a ton of expenses behind the scenes that you know, keep us going, kind of thing. So anything you can donate financially is appreciated. But for every $5 each month that you're able to donate, you then get to pick a movie that will go into a draw every quarter that can be, if it's picked, will get done as a review either on the Dark Discussions main feed or one of the sister podcasts, depending where it falls genre-wise and all that good stuff. However, understanding the financial times around, if you are not able to support us financially, you can still help us by sharing the podcast on whatever from, and also, well, if you're able to give a review on whatever podcast provider you're listening it from, because some reviews are also very helpful for us being able to keep going. So any way that you're able to help us, whether it's financially or social media or reviews, is appreciated, as is just listening and downloading and being here. So thank you for all of that.
Indeed, indeed. Appreciate it. And thank you in advance. And thank you for listening as well. All right. So this is our second attempt to record episode 5. Called The Past, because folks maybe noticed that the episode hadn't been released last week when it was supposed to, because we recorded it, and it came out fine. The conversation was great, but in the background there was a episode of Fallout actually playing, and not just playing as background noise, but actually in the feed. Or I should say the channels that we are recording. So it was kind of weird. No worries. So we decided to re-record tonight. So we're going to have two episodes released this week. First episode is episode 5 called The Past, which was the fifth episode of season 1 of Fallout. Directed by Claire Kilner and written by Carson Mell. It's one of the shorter episodes of the season, about 38 minutes if you take away the credits, and we're going to talk about it again. And this time, for release. So what we do here on this podcast is basically we talk about everything and anything related to the show, including this specific episode. We're assuming that everybody who is listening to this podcast is a fan of the show and is listening for feedback. So you've probably already all watched the show and this specific episode, and you are now just searching for quote-unquote radio material to hear folks talk about the specifics to the episode and other perspectives and whatnot. And that's what we're here to do for tonight. And tonight's episode, once again, is the past. So we'll go around and give our review, each of us. And then after that, we'll talk about everything and anything. So let's go with you, Kevin.
Fun show. I'm really enjoying just everything about this show. It's been really enjoyable. And, you know, I'm just enjoying doing this. And like every other episode, it's been fun.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, for me, this episode, episode 5, was actually pretty solid. During our aborted episode we recorded, Mike mentioned that it was interesting that the ghoul does not make an appearance in this episode. But instead, it focuses on Maximus and Lucy, where they find each other. And then, of course, Norm. I think his name, yeah, Norm, the brother, and what's going on in Vault 30, 1, 2, and 3. So my feelings for this episode, I actually liked it a whole lot. It's probably the least episode so far with action or things of that nature, but it actually was probably one of my favorite episodes, and that's hard to say because every episode is pretty awesome, as Kevin has just mentioned. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about it a second time, this time for release. So, yeah, really good episode, 38 minutes and perfect. Let's go with you, Mike.
I'll probably flip around on Bill's opinion. Look, every episode in this series is good. This is not a not be sucking up to the showrunners in the hopes of getting an interview or anything. Not that we would object. But I would say it's, to me, this film, I don't want to say filler, but it is a lot of connective tissue. This feels like it's something that's sort of bringing the ball a little further down the field, but it's not really there to score the touchdown. It's there setting up what's coming down the road. And a lot of it's good, but it's like a transition piece. And so it's like when I look back at the series and I look back at the 8 episodes, this is probably not going to be the standout episode. I'm not even sure if there's going to be standout scenes that jump immediately to mind, but it's absolutely a vital piece. And what's there is certainly very good and very entertaining, but I don't know if it's going to have anything, if it had anything, let's say, as good as, the scene in the meat market last episode.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. No, I was on mute, unfortunately. So sorry about that minor delay.
That last time too. So we're just recreating the yes. previous version of the episode. All we're trying to do is recreate.
We do not.
Weirdly enough, had the same exact conversation.
We do not. We didn't know why. We don't have free will. We do the same things over and over and over. All right, let's go with you, Sean. What do you got?
Yeah, I was another great episode. There's not much more I can say other than it's just damn enjoyable. And thankfully, even at a shorter running length, it was still enjoyable, and it didn't feel like filler. And I'm so glad that they didn't try and put, as we've seen in some other series, that either like live on filler or such things, and it takes away from the story and just could like tighten it up. This seems like they know how to tell a tight story and are willing to accept an episode that's not 45 minutes or whatever, so, and still get the story told. So I just think they're doing such a great job this season.
All right, sounds good. And Barrett.
Well, an orange cat just walked by me twice. I think I'm in the Matrix. But, however,
I like this one as much as I liked it the last time we talked about it. It's not the most action-oriented episode ever, but it is an important episode for character building between the two of the main characters. And it just has, you know, some good story to it. It's not got a really fast pace, but we get to learn a lot more about our characters and how they're going to deal with each other. So great episode. Looking forward to the rest of the series.
All right. Sounds good. That's very well. Very well. All right. So we got to go into spoilers. So basically, you know, just talk about everything and anything related to this episode. The episode has, I mentioned a couple of items of note. No ghoul, but Norm in the vaults, as well as our two other leads in the show besides the ghoul, which include Lucy and Maximus. All right, so where do we want to go? Where do we want to start? What do people want
to begin? One thing kind of to add on to my little commentary on the episode is it adds a piece to the puzzle. I mean, one of the things about this show I like is the mystery to it. And it adds a couple pieces, and it's really fascinating. It's like everybody else was talking about how this story flows well, and how they don't need to drag on. If it's going to be 38 minutes, then or whatever how many it is, they're not going to drag it on to 55. They just said, all right, well, all we need is 38 minutes for this episode, and that's it. And
they didn't feel the need to give us a 20-minute backstory on the guy in his underwear back in episode 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Where else do we want to go? Anybody want to add to what Kevin said?
I just like that it's a good balance between having, you know, these different aspects of genre with horror and action and drama and thriller and mystery, and none of it feels out of place.
Yeah.
They know where to use it, when to play it, and to draw back. And I just think it's great storytelling.
Right. Because, I mean, they have action in this episode, but they didn't need a lot of it. They didn't need to drag out the action, drag out the violence. It just seemed appropriate for the plot.
It reminds me again of why I love so much about One Piece, is that it seems the showrunners involved care about the material and actually care about what quality they provide with said material.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I have been trying to, I mean, I'm watching the anime right now, and there are times where It reminds me of the old Penny Dreadfuls, where it's, you know, why use one word when 27 will do? Because One Piece, they would just go on and on. I mean, they would have three episodes of Luffy fighting the bad guy, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you just get on with it. But this one, but the live action of One Piece, they don't do that. And in this one, in this show, Fallout, they do not do that either.
No, and I've been saying this from the beginning, is that this is a show that's been moving the story forward. There's been plot development, character development, and character growth since episode one. Very few characters are making it through one episode in the same place and in the same condition that they were in at the start of the episode.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And I mean, just look at, if you pick Lucy, right. She's a character who in some ways maybe has seen the least, hasn't seen a lot of growth in a lot of ways. She's still recognizable as Lucy. She hasn't like changed her worldview around, and she's still trying to persuade, in this case, in this episode, Maximus is to the wonder of the vaults. But she is certainly getting an idea of, like, the world is not the one that she was promised, the one that she'd been led to believe that it was going to be. We've seen her obviously leave the vault. We've seen her, meet up with all of our main characters, separate from them, in some cases come back together with them. She's lost a finger.
She got one back.
And she got one back, and now she's going back in a vault again. So we can see these characters are not, this is not the season where, like with Game of Thrones, and as much, and I love Game of Thrones, but there was like just an entire season where it was Varys and Tyrion together, you know, and that was the pairing for that season. You know, the season of Arya with the Faceless Man and Tywin Lannister, and that was their interaction for most of that entire season. Here you don't have that. You don't have, well, this season she's going to be with Maximus, but next season she's going to be with the Ghoul, and then the next season she's going to be back with her brother. No, they're changing up who's together, who's interacting, where they are, what they're doing, and they're still kind of keeping their eye on the goal. She's still trying to do things to get back to the fundamental drive of the show, which is she wants to get her father back.
Well, and what you're talking about there never feels natural. Like, it feels like they're doing that to give each of the actors time. And it feels unnatural when you're watching it because of that.
Yeah, this doesn't feel forced. Like, this feels like it's just with the pacing of the storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. So let's do that. Let's talk about some of the storytelling of this episode here. There's the two main things, as I mentioned, which is the Maximus Lucy thing, and then the Norm stuff. So where do we want to begin for tonight's recording?
Well, here's a question: okay. Which do you find more interesting?
Actually, believe it or not, I kind of like the Maximus and Lucy story better, and I'll tell you why, Mike, because I think you're going to lean more to the Norm. And the reason I like the Maximus and Lucy story is I think I like the innocence of these two characters in this world of hell or hate or insanity, and the enjoyment I get from watching them together as they begin to trust each other when they don't have any right to trust anybody, but they trust each other because in both cases, both could have been taken advantage of and they would be dead if either of them were evil. So I kind of enjoyed the goodness of that tale that we saw. Though of course it's not as exciting or interesting as the thriller aspect of what's going on in the vaults, but that's how I feel. Where were you thinking, Mike?
That's where I'm at, too.
I'm a little hard-pressed to say which I prefer, because I like the greater world-building we're seeing on the one hand, and I'm liking seeing the awakening of Lucy and Maximus and to a world that's filled with different possibilities than what they had realized or what they'd been brought up to believe. And yet at the same time, I like sort of the political intrigue. It's simple political intrigue, but still political intrigue that you have sitting in Vault 33. So I really don't know which I would pick.
Okay.
And you could argue that both of them are at awakening, right? Like Lucy and Maximus are awakening to the possibilities and hope. And then Norm is awakening to just the corruption and God knows what else is going on in the vaults.
Absolutely.
Well, I think for me, I enjoy the vault. I mean, both are good story. I mean, both are very good story arcs. There's no doubt about that for me. I enjoy both of them very, very much. I think I enjoy the Vault 33 more because there's more of a mystery to it. And like I said earlier, we find a piece in the puzzle, a couple pieces in the puzzle, which is, well, for me, a lot more enjoyable. But even with the arc with Lucy and Maximus, we get some more background to what happened in New California. Now, because we see you know, because there's one scene where Lucy and Maximus are walking and Lucy asks, please tell me what happened within the last 200 years. And Lucy's talking about how there was a war, how there was explosions, you know, nuclear bombs. And Maximus said, well, that happened when I was young. And she's looking at him with this quizzical, what are you talking about? Look, and Maximus shows there's this big, enormous crater. And she's looking at this thinking, what is going on? And that's when it was mentioned earlier that Lucy's worldview or whatever is getting rocked a little bit, because she thought after the war that sent everybody to the vaults in the first place, there was no civilization after that. Excuse me. And then she realized, oh, there was civilization. They really didn't need us. And I don't remember the exact quote Maximus said, but Maximus said a fantastic quote was something like, everybody had their idea of how to rebuild civilization, just no one could agree on it.
Yep, that was it.
Right.
Because then that's what he says, like, it's just the same old thing of the human idea where, like, yeah, you have all these different ideas of how you're going to save it. No one agrees, and then usually bad stuff happens. And I just like the fact, though, that like you have this idea of Lucy realizing that her whole life has been a lie, at least aspects of it, in the sense that they were told. They were – the whole reason they're in the vaults is to repopulate and bring civilization back to the surface. And then she finds out, oh, yeah, that –
Well, I don't know if she was lied to, because that could still be a goal. They could be looking at the outside world as still hell and not civilized, because
– But I think in the aspect of like the semantics of it, right, stuff going on, and that she wasn't – they weren't given what was actually going on above, right?
Right. Because what happened was is after the first – war and the bombs dropped, they all went to the vaults and they thought, you know, everything, the entire civilization is messed up. And so they're waiting for the radiation to die down so then they can emerge and bring civilization back into the world. And they did bring civilization back to the world, but then a bomb was dropped again. It looks like, and she thought, well, so, I mean, in a way you could like Sean was saying that, you know, perhaps they still have that mission. It's just, it's not exactly how they planned it. You know, there is still there's still civilization to be done. It just happened a little differently than it's going to happen slightly differently than they expect.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's necessary for her to think she was lied to, and I think we'll find out, hopefully, we might find out, you know, the extent of that in the last couple of episodes, whether she was lied to or they're just mistaken. But it's sort of like if you could be told one thing, and think about, someone who's brought up being told a particular group of people were terrible, they're all awful, and don't want to have anything to do with those people. And then you grow up and you find out, well, maybe those people aren't really all that bad. And my folks were just, you know, dealing with their own, you know, upbringing and their own background and their own prejudice.
Like Canadians?
They believed it when they said it. They were just wrong. Or maybe they were lying to you and they were spreading propaganda. In the end, it doesn't really matter. This is the characters growing up a bit. They're maturing. They're seeing that the world is not the way they had believed it was. Maybe the knights aren't the greatest thing ever from Maximus's point of view, that, you know, that you have the vault is something that is not, maybe not just filled with monsters. And maybe there are other ways to save the world than through power armor, and bullying. And at the same time, she's seeing maybe the world isn't waiting for a savior to come along. Maybe the world can save itself, and they can maybe risk opening up the doors and mingling a little bit. So they're just getting a more mature perspective on the universe.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that.
I feel like the vaults are going to wait forever, and they're never going to fix anything anyway, and the whole world's repopulating as it is. So,
well, what they're supposed to be doing, if I'm not mistaken, at least in the games, but if I'm not mistaken here too, is they're waiting for the radiation level to go. So I don't think Lucy expects her generation to be the ones that will repopulate.
No, I don't either.
Right. So I say, so if the, you know, the radiation levels where it becomes safe enough, or they create some sort of invention that will help survive in such a world, then
like Rataway?
Right. So then that would be the time when they would repopulate the world. So I do think Mike has a point there too, which is they're seeing that even if they are possibly quote unquote the future will also include these other groups of survivors too that just weren't part of their vault.
Well, I mean, what was going on here was we heard at the beginning, like at the first episode, where McLean was saying, "We are you know, not our daughters, but our grandchildren. Our grandchildren will be the first generation to be able to emerge from the vaults." You know, they're planning on like a generation and a half before they'll be able to leave the vaults and start civilization again. That's what they were, at least that's what they were talking about. It's what the father was talking about at the start of the, well, right around the wedding time, actually, in the first episode.
It's funny though, the amount of arrogance that it takes for them, you know, this whole plan, all those people that were forgotten on the top world and didn't have a place to go are now going to be told how to fix the world by the people that hid underground. I don't think that's going to go well.
Well, it explains why they had why Lucy had such bad encounters with the people in the
right
town.
Yep.
Because they looked at these vault people like, you hid away, left the rest of us to die, and then you're going to come back and tell us how to live?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's what they said. I think they were just looking at the vault people as, who are you? You know, it's like as imposters or outlanders, because these are just new people. It's like, you know, people who sail across the ocean and land up in some island and, you know, back in the colonial days. And it's like, who are you? So I think it's more like that. So really what it would come down to is they have to find the right people, because there must be the quote unquote right people on Earth, you know, the top level, that they can cooperate and work with, who would accept their technology and their farming techniques and their weaponry and all this other stuff without being plunderers or poo-pooing people like Lucy as Philly did.
Thing is, they haven't really found anybody like that yet. I mean, Lucy hasn't found anybody like that yet, because the only thing that, you know, you had Maximus saying, "We were told you were monsters." And there's the other scene with the bridge where, and even was it a couple episodes ago, where they saw the wrist computers. I don't know what they're called, but the wrist computers.
The Pit Boys.
Yeah, the Pit Boys in a store, and they saw it on Lucy's wrist, and they saw, oh, that's worth money. And the problem is that the vault people, they don't have guns. They don't have lethal guns. They have tranquilizer darts guns. And so you're going to get a bunch of people who will probably try to kill the vault people, and the vault people will just shoot them with tranquilizer darts. It's not going to, and I don't think they're going to find the right people to help civilize, because,
well, there's already a power structure up there, so they'll have to fit into that power structure.
Yeah, I mean, example, if they establish, like, if they grab a if they go to a territory that no one's really living in, and they start inhabiting it, and they start building their own civilization there, they just become one more faction. But hopefully they would also learn that we have to defend this place as well as farm it and industrialize it and all that sort of, and, you know, make it civilization, as you will. They have to do a bunch of things to it. So they would just become another faction. Because no one's going to willingly follow them, and they cannot conquer. They do not have the strategic know-how to conquer.
Right, and people are people. You know, everything is broken down into territories: town, county, state, or province, nation, continent, and so forth. And so yeah. I mean, there's no way they're going to do the utopia, unite the world. But they can be a group that could do something, assuming they find the right people. Mike, you were going to say something?
Yeah, but I think I'll go back. Who was it I was saying this? That this is a group of the surface dwellers are basically going to look at the vault people as sort of the rich interlopers coming in to their little poor community and telling them how it is and telling them what they need to do to live a
better
life.
That's why you have to find the right people. But continue.
Yeah, but even then, it doesn't matter. They're outsiders. They're outsiders telling them how to solve their problems when they haven't lived that life to even know what those problems really are. So they're going to be – they haven't fought those fights. People are just not going to buy into that. And that's something, again, I don't think Lucy is expecting was that kind of a resistance or that kind of skepticism. I think it's all around, right? I don't think that Maximus was prepared for the idea that the knights, whose job it was once again was to sort of save the world, are basically a bunch of dicks and bullies. And that maybe there are others who have a better way, like the Vault Dwellers, who might be able to offer something else. And spoiler warning, a little bit, we're going to see a little bit of that, I think, in the next episode, which we're recording for tomorrow night. But I had to rewatch in advance, because I wasn't sure I'd be able to do it today. But, so they're all getting there. Well, they're all, but they're all, it's Lucy, Norm, and Maximus are having their worldview shaken. We aren't yet seeing that with the ghoul, and we'll see if it happens at all.
It would be harder to see it happening for him than it would be for them, because he's been around so long, he's more stratified in his thought patterns and stuff.
And clearly something has happened, which they foreshadowed in the last episode. He's changed. So something, you know, has happened to him over the course of the last 200 years, whether it was the end of the world or something else, that has caused his viewpoint to change. So he's already been there.
Yep.
And the question is now, is he maybe going to find a way back? Might be the other alternative. Can he go back to being, you know, the sort of idealistic man that he thought of himself as before?
Right. And based off of his memory, since it appears that I'm assuming these flashbacks aren't just flashbacks, but also him rethinking about the past, meaning there's still vivid memories that he's having, that he may be apt to change back, I think, if the right circumstances show up. And maybe Lucy and Maximus, assuming those characters quote, meet up again with the ghoul maybe the ghoul is the right people. Maybe Maximus is the right people. People like that. So it may not necessarily be leadership or communities. It could be individuals that could be the right people. But maybe I'm just being a positive person.
Well, I mean, Maximus himself as an individual would probably enjoy the vault because it's a better life than what he grew up with. If you think, I mean, here's a kid, he was a kid whose entire family was obliterated. You know, he survived by hiding in he did an Indiana Jones where he hid in a lead refrigerator. He got rescued by, this knighthood. So the knighthood is all he really knew. And so now he sees that, well, first of all, the people in the vaults aren't monsters. They're friendly. One or at least one of them is pretty, who seems to be very friendly with him and has this sense of belonging, a sense of family, which is probably something that really appealed to him with the Brotherhood of Steel. Was a sense of belonging, a sense of family. And so I'm sure that appeals to him. So if the time for the vault, if the vault people came up, someone like him would be interested because it's what he's looking for. And it's probably not going to be as rough, violent. He's not going to be picked on, that sort of lifestyle, which is probably a lot more of what he was hoping for, and he won't be the one having to clean out the
latrines.
Yeah. Well, it kind of plays in nicely with the sequence when Lucy is trying to convince Maximus to join her and to work together. And like I mentioned before about the idea where, like, in the background, if you look, there's like the refraction of light making it. Like with the rainbow kind of thing going behind, which is like a sign of hope. And then as he agrees to join her, it kind of disappears and fades away as they move to their next objective kind of thing. I just thought that was like a really neat piece of symbolism in that moment.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. I didn't rewatch this episode to double check.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, but like I said, I'll take your word for it because, I mean, that the way you describe it sounds right.
Now, Sean, describe it once more because I want to see if I actually just missed it, like, because I hadn't rewatched that. So.
In the sequence when Lucy has got him out of the suit, the T-60, yep. And they're having the talk, and she's trying to convince him to join her. And that they will get the head together and that they can work together to help each other because she can help. She's got the thing to locate the head. And then if she helps him get the head, then he can get the knighthood to come and help her find her dad. And so as she's telling or talking to him and trying to convince him to join her, if you look, cause they're still in the outside of the tunnel that they're in. And if you look into the background, the way the light refraction is taking place, you can see a little bit of like the colors of a rainbow, which you would associate with kind of like a sign of hope. And then when he agrees to join her, it stops and then they walk off into the distance.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember that either. So, but. If it's there, I mean, everything is usually in.
It's there for a reason, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, unless it's just blatant luck, that worked out that way.
Right. There's always the shooting star in Jaws, right? That they didn't know it was going to be there. They just happened to capture it on screen, and they lacked the ability with CGI to remove it if they didn't want it there. Nowadays, if for some reason that was there, if it was an accident, it was a happy accident, and they could have removed it if they didn't want to keep it.
And that was a shooting star, you said, Mike?
Yeah, there's a shooting star in Jaws.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think they would just leave it. What's the big deal? Yeah.
No, they left it there. I'm saying my point is that they left it there.
Yeah, but
and I'm sure a lot of people
taken.
Were thinking it was... It was added. It was an optical effect or something, but it was a real shooting star, and it wasn't planned. It just happened to be captured by the cameras that night. Another famous story of this is the Stand,
Not Stan. Sorry, Stand By Me.
Yeah. Both Stephen King. Completely different stories.
There's
a scene where they're on the, I think, on the train tracks, and they see a deer. The deer is not in the script. The deer just happened to wander onto the set while they were shooting. And they recorded the kids staring at the deer. And Rob Reiner just liked that image. He liked having that, you know, and kind of backfilled later what, you know, what he thought maybe that could represent. But, you know, that whole scene could have been cut out. It wasn't planned, but it was left in there.
The coyote in the movie Collateral was another one that in the middle of the L.A., a coyote was walking down the street. And so they filmed it and they added it to the movie.
Which he means the animal, not somebody who's smuggling Mexicans across the border.
That is true. That is true. Yes.
Because the other those are fairly common in Los Angeles.
Yes, fair enough. That's true. So that could have been here as well. Or it could have just been a happy accident that meant nothing. But people can read things into it as well. As you know, we've learned when we were in English literature in college, where they made us read short stories, and half the stuff the teacher was explaining was just BS that you know, it wasn't necessarily in the story or intentional, but everything's symbolism nowadays, but who knows. But I like it, Sean. I'm with you. I think it was probably
this would be nice to have Christy help us at sometimes, right, with her symbolism.
Now Let's talk about some more of this. Let's talk about the bridge scene. That's an important scene because it shows naivety. I'm praying to God I said that right, because it's a word I always see in books. What is it?
Naivete?
Naivete, that's right. It's a word that I learned from books, because I've heard people say it. Naivete. It shows Lucy's naivete. And Maximus's,
streetwise.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. So basically there's, the scene where they're going to cross either a railroad bridge or just a regular bridge that obviously it's abandoned. There's enough, you know, it's this crap all over the bridge. And there's these two folks, a man and a woman on the other side of the bridge, that want to cross, and they want to cross, and this is where you don't necessarily trust other people in the wasteland. And since you're going to be that close to a person as you're crossing, you have to show, I guess, friendship, but also show common sense, just in case.
Wariness.
So what do we want to talk about this scene?
I thought it was just interesting when you see the dynamic of, you know, like you're saying, the naivete that Lucy has, and that, like, giving benefit of the doubt to people, while Maximus is like, don't trust. And then as the sequence reveals itself that these two are fiends who are cannibals, like, his wariness and his lack of trust was an accurate assessment. And then Lucy is like left. I think this is where she has the point where she's like, everything up on the surface is trying to kill me comment. And just like, you see kind of her exasperation, right? Because she has the idea, like, living the golden rule, and it doesn't seem like anybody understands that or respects that. And just, it's a funny sequence because of like how both Maximus and then the fiend couple are acting, where they're like both bluffing or attempting to bluff each other, and in just like a kind of a funny way. And I just thought it was like a interesting way to like both have tension and also do it through a bit of levity, even though it's a very serious situation, like when you think about it.
Right. Yeah. It's an interesting scene because, like you said, there's a lot of humor to it, but it's trying to portray how Lucy doesn't understand how people that she doesn't know, because, you know, she knows 68 people, probably 90 before the invasion that killed a good 15 to 20 of them. Everybody in the vault that she grew up with were generally kind. I'm sure they had their bullying and their pecking order and all that, but generally everybody tried to live the golden rule. So when she comes to the surface, where you have a population that is now hundreds of times the size of the 60 to 80 people in the vault, you're going to get the normal people. And that includes mental illness. That includes one in every 20 is a cluster B. You got evil people. You got people that don't follow the golden rule. You got people that just are out for themselves because they're survivalists, and on and on and on. And I think she doesn't. I think this shocks her more than the wasteland itself. But
and I think this is literally her being mugged by reality. You know, there are different views in the world about why people are good and why people are bad. And, sometimes, you can find an easy answer to that. You know, you can look and say, well, the person stole the bread because they were hungry. And she's working off this idea, probably, that people are fundamentally good. And if I don't give them a reason, then everything will be fine. There'll be no violence. They don't have any reason to be violent towards me. Now, we do see a reason. And I, in our first recording, I point out that, they do a nice subtle job of having them see the Pip-Boy on her wrist and realizing that's something of value, and they don't have to shout out, look, there she's got some technology we can sell, you know, or anything like that. But they do a good job of showing that they have a motivation. But she doesn't give them a reason for it, and she's been betrayed by her faith that if she's nice to people, they'll be nice to her. And the reality is sometimes there are just dicks in the world, and these are kind of dicks. Not everyone's going to be a great person just because you treat them kindly.
And everything is commodified, so obviously R has value. So the Pip-Boy has value. If they're cannibals, obviously their flesh has value. As we saw in the prior episodes, the Ghoul episode, she was a commodity for not the sex trade, which she originally thought that's what it was. So obviously that must be a problem in this world. But she was a commodity because she had organs. And then, you know, then there's people are commodities because we have the bounty hunter and on and on. So she sees these things and it just keeps on, it's like being punched in the gut over and over and over, where Maximus is appearing to be a fluke and to her, because everybody else has been a stinker. So I guess. Yeah, it's like you said, Mike, she's awakening in a sense that plans that she has have to be adjusted a little bit. And this is just another example of that. And it also shows the wiseness of Maximus and how Maximus is willing to agree with her in the sense that the benefit of the doubt of who these people are that are crossing the bridge. But the difference between her and him is he's willing to protect himself while she just assumes that everything's going to be okay. So in other words, he's the auditor and she's not an auditor, you know, so have faith in the people, but audit to make sure they're not going to kill you or screw you over or whatever.
Trust but verify.
Yeah, exactly. Trust but verify. Well, she just finally trusted without even thinking of trusting and verifying. So yeah, perfect. Trust but verify. Anything else about the bridge anybody want to bring up? All right. So if that's the case, what other parts of the Lucy and Maximus storyline do we want to talk about? If not, we can move to Norm, but there may be stuff.
It's her shock at seeing that there was a new civilization built and then destroyed. And us realizing that this is something that that Maximus has been through. I mean, we already saw this in flashback in an earlier episode. But he's certainly someone who's already had everything taken away from him once. And this is just reinforcing how bad this world is, how terrible this world is. But then the episode, their story will end with them falling into a trap and ending up in a vault.
It's a trap!
Which Lucy is very excited for. But I think it's fair to say anyone who's played the games knows that every vault has a secret, and most of them are not good secrets.
Right, right. Yeah, Fallout 4, there's one vault you visit that's really good, and there's no secrets, really. And then because all the secrets have died out, and then you discover that this extra area in a vault that was things were going on, but it doesn't affect the vault people that you meet. They're good. And then there's another vault where you has secrets, but it's also good. But yeah, there's other vaults in like Fallout 3 and Las Vegas or New Vegas. Yeah, there were some really bad ones.
Yeah. So I mentioned this. If you
And the vault you come from in Fallout 4 is bad. So, yeah. But anyway, continue.
If you just type in, I think I mentioned this on the prior podcast, the unrecorded recorded podcast, that if you go, like, just type in a search, Google search for Fallout vaults, you will find a list of all the vaults that have been in all the games and the TV show. Just be warned that the ones from the TV show will be spoiled for you. So if you don't want to know the secret to Vault 4 yet, then you might want to wait. But they're all there, and they're trying, they seem to be, I don't know when they decided to do this, but they are conscientiously avoiding like repeating vault numbers. So you're not going to see Vault 4 in the video game and in the TV show. Because, again, every vault has a secret, and if we've already done that vault, well, then there's no secret, is there?
You mean they're keeping consistent? That's cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, yeah.
It's just that easy to do. Yeah. I know.
Well, it's weird. Like, just sometimes the creators of a thing don't always take their own continuity that seriously. A very famous example is Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes, where like he would have suffer an injury and then he'd forgotten what the injury was. And so the next story, he still had an injury, but it was in a different part of his body.
Now it sounds like wrestling.
Right. So I know now through Scares the Care, I know author Brian Keene, and Brian Keene has been writing a kind of in a shared universe for years, or shared multiverse, going back before it was a big thing. He was kind of doing that, and he had always kind of been planning on doing a series that was sort of his version of Stand, The Dark Tower, or if you're into comics, Crisis on Infinite Earths or Secret Wars or something like that, that brought all these things together. But it wasn't really, it was a daunting task until he ran into a fan who actually had kept a detailed notebook outlining all of the connections
including some connections he himself had either forgotten or missed. And basically was able to get all that information from the fan, you know, and keep track of it. But the point being that just because you're the creator of it doesn't mean you always keep track of those little details. And it's nice that they have managed to do so over the course of 4.5 games, depending on 5.5 games, depending on how you count Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 76.
I would contend it's impossible for the creator, unless it's a team of people that create something, to keep track of everything. If you're an author of a book, yeah, people are going to just get everything, and you're never going to keep up with the amount of people that read your content.
Now,
I think anyone I know,
get back. Yeah, go on.
That does this kind of thing. There's always some fan who becomes the keeper of the lore because the author just can't believe anyone cared enough to keep track of all this shit.
Right. So,
I'm pretty sure there are ones for for Game of Thrones. Like there's fan, you know, there's people who keep track of all this stuff and who George R. R. Martin every now and then has to tap and say, what was the name of so-and-so's horse again? Now, obviously, in the modern era, it's a little easier in that you can always go back and read your control F your documents.
Yep. but Stephen King, most of his are not that way, or at least
right.
A good portion are not.
We've gone down a little bit of a rabbit hole there, but let's get back to this episode here. So
the point being that all the stuff is there. If you want to see what some of the vaults are like and some of the games, all that information is available online somewhere. You just have to Google it, and you can get an idea of what we're talking about when we say all the vaults have a secret. Very few of them are nice, happy places like Vault 4, not Vault 4, for Vault 31, 32, and 33.
Well, at least 33. I mean, Vault 32 is dead, and we haven't seen Vault 31 yet.
It's going to get better, right? They're moving back.
So we got the Lucy Maximus story. I guess that's the thing that happens, right? Is that they fall, they get stuck into this other vault, right? So was that it for their story? And we move on to the
one thing
stuff?
I was going to add, Phil, was the start of the sequence, which is when Thaddeus locks Maximus into the T-60, right? And basically Maximus trusts Thaddeus, and then Thaddeus burns it to the ground. And so it's interesting that, like, right after that whole sequence of, like, having your trust burned or putting it in the wrong person, then Lucy is asking him to do it again.
Right,
like,
right
after. And I thought that was, like, a very interesting kind of aspect of that.
This was actually one thing I brought up in the prior recording that got screwed up. That in the game, when you don't have the battery, whatever it's called, I forget. Even though I've played the game hundreds of times,
and fusion core,
the fusion core, yeah.
So as long as if you don't have fusion cores, you can still get out of the suit. But what happens is the suit is still, you can move it too. It's just that it's at a shuffling, crawling pace. So it's like taking a sloth. So it has just. Like, I don't know how it works, but the fusion core powers it so then it walks normally. But in the TV show, they decided to have it not work at all, as well as you can't get out of the suit. And in the video game, yeah, you can pickpocket and whatever. Probably, you know, you probably can steal the fusion core.
Because was it you, Phil, or Mike who made the point in the episode that we have to re-record now about the fact that, like, what a terrible system to
and that system isn't how it is in the game, so this is new to the series. So that's just one thing I wanted to note. But to get back to Maximus and this Squire, it begins with a T. What's his name again?
Thaddeus.
Yeah, so Thaddeus, was he a bad guy to do that? Or In other words, he trusted, and they seemed like they were becoming buddies, but then when he finds out it is Maximus and not the...
Not Titus.
Right. He flips out.
Yeah.
Well, he probably... Well, he thinks that one, Maximus killed Titus, or two, like somehow Maximus is responsible.
Right.
Somehow Maximus messed up. Somehow Maximus betrayed the Brotherhood. Because Maximus is now the one in the armor, and it wasn't Maximus that said, okay, you know, Titus is dead. I got to find somebody else.
He lied to him, so he's going to not trust him at that point.
He lied to the Brotherhood. One thing I do want to mention is when they go into the hospital on the area, like the area right in front of the stairs, you see the Vault-Tec symbol painted on the ground.
Yeah, you brought that up last.
I brought that up, so I wanted to bring it up again. And I don't, I mean, it's so, I mean, what they're going, the hospital or the research area, what they're going into is a Vault-Tec controlled business or controlled business hospital, right. What have you. So
research
there's
center,
a,
because that's what it's called, right?
Like, yeah, a research center.
It's a research center. So,
right. Yeah. So it's a hospital/research center. So it also shows that Vault-Tec wasn't just building vaults. I mean, they had other things going on.
Yeah. Vault-Tec was an international corporation that was in, had business in numerous things. So they're not just one thing. So they're like a huge
They had fingers in lots of pies.
Yeah, they're a huge conglomerate.
Like every company
like,
these
like
days.
Like Cargill or Mitsubishi or whatever.
Google.
Or DuPont and so on and so forth. Yeah. So there's so
GE.
It wasn't a big deal that they owned a hospital or they owned a school, you know, a private school or whatever. But for us, assuming things go the way they're going, and as Mike mentioned numerous times, Vault-Tec has done a lot of bad things. It looks ominous. For sure.
It could have served as a warning if they were paying attention.
But that isn't necessarily a warning to a lot of people because, first of all, that was 250 years ago. And second of all, survivors, if you could survive and you were still around, you wouldn't know that Vault-Tec was necessarily bad because they were just another company that,
yes.
You know, so that's all I wanted to make. But I guess
whereas the game, in the game, you understand that Vault-Tec is nefarious, right?
Right. And so for us, the viewer, I think it's more of a warning for us, the viewer, rather than for the characters in the show.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to point out. But that was a good note. And also that I did mention last time when the recording collapsed was Vault-Tec also had vaults in all sorts of places. They had vaults in police stations. They had vaults in subway stations. They had vaults in hospitals. They had vaults in schools. They had vaults in factories and business offices as well. So
it's like they're doing their civic duty, helping their community, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they wanted to save as many people as possible.
Yeah.
For experiments.
and so on. So that was a good point to bring that up, Kevin. Basically what happens is during that battle, they get shot, meaning Maximus, and it's worse than expected. So that's why they do
it. It's a tooth, too. He's shot by a tooth.
Yeah.
With a tooth.
So that would be infection, possibly, too.
Yeah.
So
yep.
They decide to head to this hospital to see if they can find medicine or help or whatnot. And just make sure it's not a hospital like the one that was going to take her organs. All right. So anything else about Lucy and Maximus before we go into Norm?
No, I'm good.
Not for me.
All right. Let's get into Norm. All right, so where do we want to be?
Norm in chat.
Yeah, and what's the one-eyed girl's name? I forget her name.
Stephanie.
Yeah. And then of course the new leader of the vault too.
Oh, Betty.
Betty. Yeah.
I'm voting for Betty. I'm sorry, I'm voting for Betty.
Well, yeah, you don't want to disappear.
I put up 10 posters.
We had a great conversation about the voting at that. Unfortunately, it was lost. We have the recording, but again, it's all crappy. But we were talking about how was the voting fixed? Was it intimidation to vote for Betty? Because there were 67 people we came up with that survived, that are survivors in the vault.
Was it 68? And then
was it 68?
I think it was 68.
68 plus the baby.
Yeah.
Including the baby.
Yeah, and the percentage of votes were 2-point-something% for non-Betty. And that came out. We did the calculation in the last episode that we recorded that we're not releasing, is that it was two people who voted not for Betty, while all the 66 other people did. And we're assuming, this is our assumption that we came up with, was that Norm was one that did not vote for her, and the other was the other guy that was running against her, the chubby guy with the beard.
Right.
And that's it. Everybody else voted for her. And I think that brought up the phrase, when you're not sure, vote for 30 or whatever it was. I don't know. But you were going to
say, like, when all seems glum, vote for 31 or something like that.
Yeah, it's just, right.
Because that's one of the things that we find out at the beginning of the portion of the vault episode, is that Norm does a lot of checks, does some computer checks, and he finds that all of the leaders in Vault 33 were transfers from Vault 31, including his dad.
Yep.
And including Chet's girlfriend, Stephanie. You know.
Let me just interject for a second. And I mentioned this in the other recording, the hacking that he does is right from the game. So it's a good nod to the game for folks who played the game. They would get a smile on their faces, as I did. But anyway, continue.
Okay, and so he's very suspicious about what's going on. They go in and they see just bloodshed everywhere, but also looks like a bunch of suicides, because you see the one guy sitting down and he's got his he got his hand on a fork and the fork's jammed into a toaster. And you see all these messages like, we know the truth, and, you know, and various things like that. And then
it's quite messy.
Yeah, it was very messy. And then Betty, like, we find out Betty gets elected by 98% of the people. And I Phil, you know, we had this discussion last week. Phil thought it was fixed. I don't think it was fixed. I just think it was brainwashing or mental conditioning.
Manipulation of some kind.
Manipulation, yeah. Because when they go and vote, you hear Betty's voice over the loudspeaker. Now it's time to vote. Vote for the right person. Yeah, of course, everybody thinks, you know, because of that control of that, because the one guy says, I put up 10 posters. It's like,
well, and I will say that me and Barrett, and thank you, Barrett, for agreeing with me, was even if it wasn't fixed, it was manipulation, which is itself
the type of fixing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, it's propaganda.
And Mike argued on this point against
them. Yes, yeah.
Right. To me, fixed, when you say fixed, it means fixed, because someone went in, the election was broken, and they fixed it, right? They forced you to get the results that they wanted, whether it's marching people down at gunpoint and telling them who to vote for, or stuffing the ballot box, something like that. That's, to me, fixed.
Right? Or putting fear into people.
But they're not intimidating people to vote a certain way.
Are they?
They're
not?
Using
we don't know
a campaign
that.
Slogan.
I'm with Barrett on this one.
Mike. We don't know
they're
that.
They're using campaign slogan. Now the catch is right. But now the difference is: are they manipulating events? Right? Are they doing a rights shot fire? Are they trying? In this case,
exactly.
By doing the
which is what
be
I think
the drought. Whereas in previously when her dad got voted in.
There was a blight of some sort.
Yes,
right. In this one, it was the invasion
by
the Raiders.
Yeah.
And whether or not it was the Raiders were intentionally let in or not, the point is they're taking that incident and using that as
well. It wasn't just the
tactic to have people vote.
It wasn't just the invaders. It was the water system that was broken.
That's both those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have multiple emergencies that cause people to vote a certain way.
Right. And the thing is that after Betty gets elected, you don't hear of any of these problems anymore. You don't hear of.
Not only that, they clean out the other vault completely.
Oh,
and we don't even know how that was done so quickly and so effectively.
Exactly. Just out of nowhere, the blood and the writing on the wall and all that's all painted over. The toaster's fixed. And, you know, ironically, pops up toasts. You know, it's the same one. And the
except the computer has the bullet in it.
Yeah, I don't know if they missed that or not.
I think that was in the facility. Couldn't use it again.
The computer in Vault 32, right? 32.
Yeah,
the second
we're going to.
Yeah, is now not working. There's an actual bullet in it that is destroyed. Which is kind of weird. If they were really good, whoever is sabotaging and did all the changes and got rid of the corpses, you think they would just pulled, you know, broke a piece inside the computer, not put a bullet through it because it's
right.
I think it was that was like a subtle sign to a certain norm.
Yeah.
Of what went on.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, I think it's made very clear. And by the way, we should talk that the actress who plays Betty, we were
fantastic.
Is fantastic, and that she takes this character who appears to be just sort of the nice old lady role. Is not in any way physically intimidating.
Benevolent.
And she doesn't try to be physically intimidating, right? She's not acting as if.
But it's those little glances, those little looks she gives, where it's just like it's that. Those are menacing.
Right. So he sees the two guys come back from Vault 32. They claim that they were just planting corn or wheat or something, and she clearly isn't buying it. And then the vault is cleared out. So if she's and she destroys the computer. So it's a case where he has nothing. And he probably wasn't going to do anything with this to begin with.
No.
Because
what could he do with it?
What could he have done with it before, right? And could he have persuaded? But now he has no hope of doing it, right? He has no way of showing people the things he found. He's going to have to try to tell a tale of all these people who committed suicide, but there's no evidence of these people having done that.
Chet keeps on telling him, you know, let's not look behind the curtain and let it go.
Yeah, he's done with it because now he's got Stephanie and her baby and he's got more than enough stuff to worry about.
He's getting laid and he's happy.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's interrupting the status quo. And to them, the status quo has been working well for a while, for the most part. You know, they're happy and the funny part is that so many times you see kind of this, everybody's happy and it's almost like a brainwashed happy, I guess.
It's a cult.
Yeah, it's like a cult. Actually, that's what it reminded me of. And it's like, okay, everybody's happy. And you know, so you don't want to mess up. You don't want to rock the boat because if you rock the boat, then you're going to mess up the system. If you mess up the system, you know, people are not going to be happy. And, you know, maybe something else gets disturbed. And it's just they just like how things are. And even if they are being controlled, they're still happy about it.
Yeah, they're comfortable.
They don't want a thing. They don't. Yeah, they're comfortable and they. To realize they don't need to think for themselves. They'll let the leadership do it for them and they're content.
And I think if we had they had not done the plot point of showing us Norm finding out that everyone who took over as head of the vault was from 31, it would have us a different light of how we're looking.
We'd have less suspicions right now than we do because of that. I mean, we'd still see those little side glances from Betty, but they wouldn't have quite the ramifications that they do now that we know that all the people that lead came from.
And the fact that again, the actress who plays Betty is so good in how she carries herself, where she's, again, like we're talking about being benign and seemingly, you know, just wants everything to be good and everyone to be happy. And but then mixing it with those shifty looks and glances that she gives to Norm, where, you know, she knows he's investigating stuff and she knows that he's digging, and, you know, just the, that kind of like very uneasy talk they have when he wants to get the piece of cake from her.
Mm-hmm.
After she's,
but she's also gaslighting him, right? She's not,
well, yeah, that's right. Right.
She's not validating anything. She's not saying, yeah, I know what you saw, but good luck proving it to anybody. You know, she's just, yeah, we cleaned it up real good. And it's just pretending innocently that she doesn't know what it is that she did, but we all know she knows what she did.
But well, it goes back right to the manipulation aspect we were talking about, whether it's the fixing.
Mike said gaslighting.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway, sorry. it's an offline joke. Anyway, continue. Continue, Sean.
Oh, no, I was just saying it goes back to that idea of the manipulation, right?
Well, like, and it's that. Right, yeah, and it's ironic that he's considered the underachiever when, you know, in that earlier episode where he's just basically, yeah, that sounds like me. And, you know, he's constantly underestimated. So now as he's looking at things, people are starting to have a different, well, certain people are starting to have a different view of him. So it's fairly interesting character progression.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it was just in this, prior to the invasion by the Raiders, he didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to question anything. After the Raiders happened, he starts looking around and he starts seeing oddities that weren't necessarily as obvious prior to the invasion. And
well, he spoke with a couple of the prisoners, the invading prisoners, and they're the ones who told him to go look at 32. 32 is not all that, you know,
not what you think it is.
It's not what you think it was.
Right. Exactly. So,
oh, and we also find out that, I mean, did we find out, was it this episode? We find out that, the mother's Pip-Boy was used to open
that
up.
That was in the previous episode, wasn't it?
Okay, yeah, because, I mean, there's one scene. Yeah, it's the mother's Pip-Boy was the one that was used to open the door to let the invaders in 32.
Yeah.
And they asked Betty, you know, how did they do that? And she said,
I buried her with it.
I buried her with it. You know, your father and I buried her with it. And I'm thinking, okay, so that's.
And you'll be buried next.
Well, I do. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of curious on how they did. Well, I think I know how. I mean, I know how they got in, but that's for a later episode.
So yeah, and I will say this: once he goes to 32 after the Raiders tell him this crap, and after he finds out online that everybody that's led 33 has been a 31 transplant, I think that's ominous a little bit. Oh, a little weird. It's very odd. It's too coincidental.
What are the odds?
Right. Anything's possible if it wasn't fixed, but it's a little fishy. And then when you go to the other vault and you see all the dead people and the hell that is, that's huge. And, you know, for whatever reason, he and Chet decide not to go public with it right off the bat. But then when they go back to 32, expecting to see what they saw, and it's now cleaned up, who cleaned it up? That's the nefarious.
Well, and one other thing nefarious. Is, I know we've discussed whether or not this was fixed, but it could have been fixed. We would not know because the votes are in, you know, silence. Nobody else knows what the other people voted, so they could always think, oh, well, everybody else voted for her.
Yeah, but I think you have the one guy there who's meant to represent the general population to the audience, who is basically telling everyone he can possibly tell that he's voting for Betty, right? And so, yeah, I suppose that could be a red herring, but they're going out of their way to show the guy who's sort of the stand-in for the people of the vault, that the people of the vault are just going to vote for Betty. They even show that one of the candidates choosing to vote for Betty rather than vote for himself. So when you have that happen, I kind of work under the assumption that the results are on the level.
I agree, but I'm just saying that
there's a deeper manipulation is what it is. This is like long-term, long-game manipulation, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I think, like, so you can still say that's an aspect of the fixing the election in the sense that you are literally fixing the people's mindset. So then you can just do whatever with the actual election, and you can actually just rely on an actual legit election because you've already got people already in the mindset you need.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Sean. I feel that Norm, as you said, Mike, is a stand-in for us, in a sense. I don't know what else to say except that I think you're spot on, Sean.
And
I think they do a good job of it.
Oh, go on, Sean.
Nope.
I mean, not Sean, Kevin.
Yes, sir, Kevin.
Just saying, I think pretty much covers it.
Yeah. So
dispersal of them sending the people to 32, right, to repopulate it.
Right. And why the certain people chosen? And I mean, we said Stephanie was chosen for an obvious reason because she is a 31.
31,
and,
yeah.
And they want 31 people to be the rulers. And she was given, she wasn't even voted. She was elected. Picked specifically by Betty to be the new leader of the vault. So there's not.
Well, we don't know that she's the leader yet. I don't even know.
That's what they said.
Because remember, she had a meeting for everybody down at the vault. So I don't think it was just the people going into Vault 32. I don't think they've made that official yet in the show.
They'll tell you that probably like the next next episode or next two episodes. Yeah. That we haven't.
Yeah. Okay. You could be right.
Well, what they said was that they're gonna. People went in there, and everybody's looking around like, oh, this is nice, this is great, And that's when Betty said, all right, we're gonna choose people to go over, and we'll choose you soon.
Yes. And then you're chosen. Right.
And then that's when we last week. When we originally did this, we theorized that. That Stephanie is going to be going over
end up
the
being a groomed for the leadership, right?
And
because she's
selected for leadership because she's a 31.
That has not happened yet, and I have not seen that yet.
Yeah, the thing
that's what we theorized last week.
Yeah, we're not guaranteeing this, but the thing that was also fun as part of our podcast was the fact that you had the nice fresh nice cool refreshing Nuka-Colas set out in the newly refreshed Vault 32. And I thought that was really cool.
That was a good wink to fan service for us video game fans of the show that also watch the show.
I'm a Nuka, you're a Nuka, when you want to be a Nuka too.
So,
Nuka-Cola, drink
Nuka-Cola. Every time you drink a Nuka-Cola, you got a bottle cap, and that's money.
And it's your currency.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of interesting. Also, in the game, every time you drink a Nuka-Cola, you get radiation poisoning like you do in everything else in the world. But since it's in the vault, you don't get that. That means it's free from radiation. But you usually find them out in the world, outside of the vault. Yeah. But it does give you health points. You just get radiation poisoning.
That's great.
It's the balanced product.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you get two bars. You get the radiation bar and you get the health bar. And so you got to just make sure you maintain both of them correctly.
And isn't the caffeine level like insanely not healthy?
No, I mean, I drink my Red Bulls. I drink my.
No, I mean, in regards to the Nuka-Cola being that it's like that has a way higher level of caffeine and stuff than it like normal drinks would.
That's what I just said about Red Bull. Red Bull.
Well, if you want to consider Nuka-Cola and Red Bull the same, then okay. I can go with you on that. That's fine.
I honestly don't know the history of Nuka-Cola and whether or not it is a high caffeinated drink or not.
I thought I read that somewhere, but I could be wrong.
You may have. I haven't.
Could be like Jolt, all the sugar, twice the caffeine.
Yeah. Like but I'll say Red Bull doesn't have a cool mascot like Nuka.
Well, actually, you know what is funny is I read an article like 3 weeks ago that says regular coffee still has more caffeine than any of these things, which is kind of funny. It's just that they add other stuff that isn't caffeine to Red Bulls, like the whatever exercise stuff, electrolytes, I don't know, whatever. But anyway, so if we go back to this here, so Norm has two incidents, at least I remember, and I think we brought both of them up, but in passing, where Betty is kind of a evil person to him. The first one is, I don't know what order, but I'll just list them one and two. Number one I'll bring up is the bullet in the computer, and then she walks in on him and starts talking to him, and he's obviously, you know. And then the second one was when he goes up for the piece of cake and Jell-O or whatever, and she's waiting for him to say something that isn't related to the dessert.
Super uncomfortable.
Yeah, and he's like,
there's a third too.
Yeah,
when they come back from the vault, and she's asking them like, "Where were you guys?" We were like, "Tato's."
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a fair point too. And then also another interesting aspect too that was kind of nerve wracking was when he's talking to Stephanie, about the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I'm thinking
they're so good.
That's why I'm thinking Stephanie may be part of the whatever's going on.
All the Vault 31 people are, I would think.
Yes, I think
they all have to know something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it is curious. It is curious. Yeah, so who are the 31ers and who are the 33ers? Because the 32ers are all dead, so it doesn't even matter. So,
well, the 31ers, were gone too, right? I thought that was what it was.
Oh, that's what they're thinking, right? Because they think the Raiders took over 31. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Because remember, that's what episode one was, right? The 31 people show up, and they're really actually Raiders. So they're thinking maybe they invaded 31. But who knows what's going on. Yeah, so what does this mean for 31ers? Are they – how can they – bad if they're just 31ers. Now, I'll say this. In the video game, Fallout 4 anyway, there's a lot of people in the vaults that are cryogenically frozen.
Yep.
And then they wake up 250 years later. And so they are people that either worked for Vault-Tec or they lived before the war and they happen to be people who paid to get into Vault-Tec, or they just happen to be lucky people who are running down the street and ran to a vault and they let them in. And so there are people that are people, not ghouls, that actually lived when Vault-Tec was a regular company and the world was still nuclear free, except for the threat of it, not the actual blowing ups. So besides Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So my question is, who are 31 then, right? Are they just X generation of people that have just kept on breeding, or are they cryogenic people that came back? Because they're obviously trying to say some sort of mystery. about 31. So what is it? Anyone have ideas? Barrett, I know you haven't gone ahead too much, if at all. Do you have any ideas what you think it is?
I don't know, but I do think there's an overarching Vault Tech group of people that are still running things and that are in the background somewhere. That's my feeling.
Yeah, you could be right. But because
and all of these are experiments.
Yes.
Every right. single vault is its own experiment. And I don't think their intention from their perspective was ever to repopulate the world. It was just to keep experimenting.
I'm with you, Barrett.
Which is weird. Because destroying everything and experimenting and yet not having a normal world of with trees and water.
Phil, I go with the idea that Darks and Cluster B types, we do not understand how their brains work.
No. What their motivations you never will either, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yep.
So what seems like completely normal to us or like understandable to us is not the same for
right.
Those types.
Yeah.
And what seems insane to us is not to some other people.
Yeah, that's not an issue. They have no qualms.
Right. Yeah. The good example that I always think of when I think of it like not wide world but just small and base is like the mob. It's like you have all these families. Like we saw in the movie Goodfellas, if you've seen that movie. And they're all buddies and friends and whatever. And then they do all these horrible things, and they don't even think twice about it. And it just doesn't make any sense. And except for, you know, they get money or whatever. And that is good enough for them. But it makes no sense. So I think you're right. If all these Cluster B people, if you get them together like you do in the mob, or just evil people, Cluster B and evil, whatever they are, and then you could have weird things happen, like what I guess you suggested, Barrett.
Yeah.
That's scary. Well, it's not even scary. It's just weird. Because everybody's
dead. It could be both.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there was this great documentary. I forget the name of it. But it was about Robert McNamara, who was the Secretary of Defense during Nam and under Johnson and Kennedy. And he was talking about how, you know, and it was about Nam, but it was also about the Cuban Missile Crisis too. And years later, he met with Fidel Castro, and he was talking to Fidel Castro about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I'll just show you how fucked up in the head Fidel Castro is, the sociopath and scumbag that he was. He said that he told Khrushchev to just nuke the whole United States. And McNamara said, obviously Khrushchev said no. He goes, yeah, he said I was an idiot or whatever. And then McNamara asked him, but why would you want him to do that? Because that would destroy you too. And he goes, oh, it doesn't matter to me. All that matters is that we win, even if we don't survive.
So he's literally somebody who wants to watch the world burn.
Yeah, he's completely insane. It's Fidel Castro. Thank God he only owned a teeny country. But imagine a nut like that as the leader of, like...
What's funnier is we put him in the position to be in charge.
That is true. Yeah, absolutely. So he was willing to have the world burn just because of anger and hatred and just wanted to be proven right. And so
this reminds me of how I play board games. Like, I don't necessarily need to come in first because I don't care about winning. But if I can come in second and you lose, like the whoever I want to lose, then that's fine with me.
Right. At least but that's just a board game, though.
Right. And that's just a board game.
Yeah. But, you know, so it is interesting. So, yeah, maybe these people, something's up with Vault-Tec and what will...
Well, that's the difference, is they see real life as a board game.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the scary part.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway,
back to the
rabbit hole.
I just want to remind listeners that I have watched ahead. I know what's coming. I am not chiming in on this.
Well, I've watched ahead too, but I'm trying not to give any spoiler stuff.
There will be some big hints in the next episode, which I just rewatched today.
And we will be talking about it tomorrow. Yeah. So Barrett will watch it.
I've already watched it. So
I'm, all right. So you know.
I wish I had not. I watched it before I knew that this one didn't go through. So they kind of mixed together for me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with me too.
I give kudos to everyone for being very careful as to what we're talking about with this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure most of the people who listen to this podcast probably just binge watch the show anyway, but maybe some of you are on a journey with us where we're watching an episode a week, but who knows? All right. So anything else about Norm and Chet and all that good stuff?
I think we touched on most of everything that we had first time around.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you could be right. What about you, Mike or Kevin? Okay.
No, I'm just so excited to talk about the next episode. I could explode.
Yeah. Explode.
What about Letts? Is he still there? Letts?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to bring up about Norm?
No. He's, like I said earlier, I think I discussed all I could.
All right. That's fair. All right, so this episode will be released tomorrow. So it will be released May 21st, 2024.
And then, it's shorter than our original one, too.
Yes, by about 15, 20 minutes or so. Yeah. Actually, no, yeah, we may have. Well, we talked.
Not surprising.
We also talked about other things, what we've been watching and stuff, but we'll just do that tomorrow instead of, you know, as one thing. But. Either way, let's do some house cleaning here. So, first off, Mike, what's that main podcast that me, you, Barrett, and Eric do?
The main podcast would be the Dark Discussions podcast, your source for news, for horror news, fiction, and all that is fantastic. The Dark Discussions main podcast of the Dark Discussions News Network has been going now since 2011. And we're getting close to, what is it, episode 300? Not 300, 650?
650, yep.
I don't know where 300 came from.
Is that all the other ones combined?
We need to have a special 666 episode.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we just reviewed a film that I don't remember. We just reviewed Late Night with the Devil. We reviewed Talk to Me.
Backhead was last, yeah.
Yeah, Talk to Me.
And we're going to be reviewing an animal-themed movie. I just don't know which animal it's going to be as our next one.
What the heck was that film that we're doing? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, so you can follow that weekly. That's a podcast that comes out every week. Talks about a genre film, so horror, sci-fi, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, and so forth. Barrett, what's that podcast that me and you do, and we bring in a number of guest hosts? We'll
Halloween start Boutique. That up soon, Halloween again. Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. We were supposed to do The Fall Guy, but I'm guessing that you did not have time to see it, so we'll have to wait on that one.
Yeah, we'll probably do that as we get closer to it coming on VOD.
Yeah,
Emily is so disappointed in you, Phil.
I'm disappointed.
Well, I got to only see one film this weekend.
Yeah, it was
and
If.
I did see Emily Blunt, but she only did the voice of a character.
Yeah,
I saw If.
So you really didn't see her; you just heard her.
Right. But I saw her husband.
Well, he closed his eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I had to see it with the kids. I had to see it. Yeah, well, I was all excited. I was like, oh, I'm going to see Emily Blunt. And then I found out that she and Steve Carroll and whatnot, they were all, like, playing cartoon characters. So it was like a Roger Rabbit type thing. Yeah. So either way, I did get to hear her. That's Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. Kevin, what's that podcast that we just wrapped up about TV show on Netflix?
Yes, we are also covering the live-action show One Piece based off of the Japanese animated show of the same name, One Piece, and in that podcast is called Boa Hancock and the One Piece. And I am really looking forward to season two coming out.
Indeed, indeed. And let's see what else. Sean, what was that podcast that we just finished up about a television series on Paramount Plus?
That would be Cortana's Communiques, which was based on watching the first two seasons and possibly only two seasons of Halo from Paramount Plus, where I will say again that listening to the podcast will be probably far more entertaining than the actual watching of the series was.
Mm-hmm. Give it a listen. About that, but...
Well, I thought it was fun. The podcasts were much more fun.
Well, it's fun to be the ones complaining about something. It's not always as much fun to listen to people complaining.
I have a feeling a couple of people might have agreed with us, though.
Yeah, yeah. I can understand why some people would be disappointed. But again, if they're honest, well, it depends. It depends if they were fans of the video game and then they watched the show, or if they just watched the show.
Yeah, generic sci-fi people coming in.
No, I don't think that. Yeah, I don't think anyone here, for the most part, sets out to be mean, right? To bash on a show because our listeners like it. I don't know. You people don't write in. You really need to write in darkdiscussions@AOL.com.
And I would say, for the balance that we had, like, look at the difference between how the mutual enjoyment that everyone had for One Piece, and then we had the Halo. And then we come to the Fallout series, and again, seems to be like we are all enjoying this series and seeing many good things in the series that are being done, right? So it's not like we're just out here to bash stuff.
No, we would much rather enjoy the shows that we're watching.
Enjoy it and actually be able to like be excited about watching it. And again, none of the criticism that we have is towards the actors or actresses involved. It's usually based on the showrunners and terrible storylines or writing and all that goes with that.
Yeah,
it's not something that we go after the actors or actresses who are doing only the best they can with terrible material sometimes.
Unless an actor or actress sucks, which can happen, but is actually more seldom than poor scripts and poor movies.
Yes. I'm beginning to discover that showrunners can suck. If they're not Jonathan Nolan or Benny Wise,
the clown?
No, the two
Benioff and Wise. Yeah,
Benioff and Wise. If any of those two groups of people, Nolan and his wife, Joy, are Benioff and Wise, then a lot of times the showrunner, it's a lot of crap. A lot of crap out there.
Yeah.
Garbage. Rubbish. Rubbish.
Who did the Midnight Mass? Because that guy does good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's a miniseries, though. It doesn't count.
Yeah, but he's Flanagan. Done other series, though, right? But like hey, Flanagan, Phil, Mike Flanagan.
Phil, one last note. Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews has a big month coming up next month, which is not long
away. Yeah, that's right. We got to get – so in 2 weeks. So we already got one movie all set, Sydney Sweeney. It's going to be great.
All right.
Okay.
Yep. And then I got to find three others. So we'll pick that up. And what is that, Barrett?
It is LGBTQ month, and we watch a movie every week and review it.
That's right. Basically, art house lesbian films, though we're going to have one comedy this year with the Sydney Sweeney.
That'll
be a nice change for dark topics.
Yeah, because a lot of the art house stuff is just depressing crap.
It really is.
You know, I mean, it's really.
Some of it's done very well, but it's a very good depressing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's well-written depressing shit, but.
So we're gonna have a huge mainstream film. Where the theme of LGBTQ theme is actually in the background, but it's still part of the film. So that's the Sydney Sweeney film, which everybody
that should be fun.
Knows what it is. And then we'll have three art house films, so three depressing films and one fun film. All right, so let's get into our final thoughts on this episode here called The Past. So let's start with you, Sean.
So another great episode. It's been 5 for 5 so far this season. great cast, great environment, music, choices, like storyline, everything is just done well. And it rewards you and makes you feel good about watching it and continuing to watch it. So go Fallout.
All right. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, it's a really good show, really good episode, as they all are. And again, moving the plot forward, moving the mystery forward. And now we have two mysteries that we might be able to look forward to next week, being the mystery of Vault 4 and the mystery of Vault 31.
All right. For me, yeah, it was a great episode. I enjoyed it a lot. And it was a nice 36 minutes, so it didn't drag. And I love my drama. Always love my drama more than sci-fi or horror or action. And this one had all the drama I wanted while being in a sci-fi world, so it was pretty awesome. Let's go with you, Mr. Lutz.
Yeah, good episode. Well done. And next episode is going to be just as good, but probably a little longer.
All right, and let's go with you, Bert.
Yeah, I love that episode. Love the show. Looking forward to talking about the next episode.
All right, sounds good. So, once again, we just discussed episode 5 of season 1 of Amazon's television series Fallout, based off of the video game franchise. The episode was called The Past, and we're going to go on to episode 6, which will be called The Trap. And we'll talk about all that. With all that stated, Barrett, why don't you lead us up?
Thanks again for joining us on the podcast. We'll be doing another episode tomorrow.
I know that I've lived a relatively comfortable life.
Vault dwellers are an endangered species. I do not think you would be willing to do what it takes to survive up here. If you insist on staying, then you will have to adapt.
Uh-huh.
Tomorrow, so they say, will be a lovely day. A bright new sun will suddenly break through. But I don't want to see tomorrow unless I see it with you.
And grabbed a moldy one.